everybody. Welcome in. Thanks for joining us. I'm James Adams. He's Skeeter Robinson. This is the Fantastics, My Fantasy Fix, DFS Golf Podcast. And Skeeter Robinson, we stay in the lovely state of California for another week as we get ready for the Pebble Beach rotation. But before we get into the Pro-Am at Pebble Beach, we should take a look back at Farmers. And Torrey Pines is where I don't know how your week went after a phenomenal week the week before at the American Express. I had some live bullets. I ended up like I played $50 in lineups and won $25. I had a lineup winning more than $25 before Saturday events started. So for me, it didn't end as great as I'd hoped, but a Jason Day top six ticket pays. We had another playoff. Rahm was good, as was Palmer. You know, death taxes and the Rahm-Palmer combo at Torrey. What are you taking away from the Farmers after I already spilled a little bit of my story there?
Oh, well, about halfway through Saturday, I was like, oh, yeah, there's heartbreak coming here. Palmer, I had Palmer Rose top five. I had Rose winning. He didn't get there. Yeah, I mean, I lost a little bit towards the end. I think I won $54. I played like 80. So, I mean, I was down as well, but not terrible. I did have 166. Like, out of the 15 players I think I used, I only had two miss the cut in five lineups, which was good. Unfortunately, I didn't have them together anywhere, and I had to, so that took four of my five lineups, and one of my five and sixes was good. But no, just pretty solid down the way. All the way, Rose hitting that ball to water on 18 was just, that was a killer because he was on my best team as well. But yeah, so just in the end, nothing ended up cashing. But boy, looked like it was Will Zalatoris and Luke List out of nowhere. What was he like, four, five back to start the day? And
he shot a 64. 5 or 66 on Saturday, right?
Yeah, I think so. Gets in the playoff and then sticks the third.
So first of all, I'm watching the tournament, and I don't know if you even remember in last week's podcast, but you had said something about how you thought the winner had a tendency to be a not quite yet, but soon to be top tier player
or that
would take down
tier.
A tourney like this. That's second level of player.
Yeah.
And as I'm watching Zalatoris at the end of the day, I'm like, Zalatoris really fits the mold of what Skeeter was looking for in a winner. Yep. That he might have called it, and you almost did in that regard, even though I think Sung J.M. was the guy that you put that label on for that that type, yes, of player. But I thought, man, you really did hit that if Zalatoris hits this, and you almost did. And I'll tell you this, I didn't realize Luke List was 37 years old, dude. I mean, maybe it's just that I'm old and those guys live healthier lives, so he looked a lot more than 7 years younger than me. I didn't realize he was that old.
I think I knew he was older than most people, than we originally would have thought.
Okay, yeah, I was stunned. I was like, dude, really? Wow.
But yeah, I mean, Luke List, I mean, definitely not that second tier, but he kind of hangs around a couple tournaments every year, and Pat Mayo has just bet him every single week for years, so
yeah, I saw that.
He was thrilled, and I can't blame him.
Even though I think his tweet was pretty comical. It was something like, after 10 years in a row, I'm only down $12,000 on Luke List bets now.
Yeah,
after the big hit,
just joking around, but yeah, but no, it was very good for Luke List, and you could kind of see when Zalatoris missed that punch, just the emotion run out. I'm not even sure she got to the playoff. I don't know how that put Zalatoris on 18 to, to win in regulation. That looked like a pretty good putt. Just kind of sat on the left edge and never moved.
My man absolutely left a million putts on the edge, as did John Rahm. Both of those guys could have been several strokes better than they were, but they weren't. Those putts didn't drop, so good for Luke List. But I'm telling you, like, if you watch Rahm play and you think anything other than he's going to continue to dominate this place, you're crazy. And seriously, Zalatoris, my goodness, if he could just make some putts. I forget what the number was on Friday, but I think he was a 7 under 65, and he missed something like five putts for birdie inside 6 feet. Because I think he eagled the short par four. He gained no strokes putting to shoot a 7 under. He gained like six strokes from tee to green.
Does he feel like he has some Rory in him really good irons, but will miss some. Not a bad putter, but boy, he can have some just awful putting performances.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if Rory's an awful good comp for somebody like that.
No, but I'm just saying that.
Just because he's won so many. But I get what you're saying. And yeah, I mean, because he was a ball striking machine, particularly on Friday.
Yeah. But I mean, he's going to get his win here sooner or later.
Yeah, I would think so. And I thought it was interesting, too. I don't know if you picked this up. Maybe it was Friday after the really good round when they were interviewing him. We were completely snowed in on Friday, so I did nothing but watch golf. I ended up getting ESPN Plus, so I was watching pre and post, like, television coverage, too. I did nothing but watch golf up until really till all weekend, not up until anything. I did nothing but watch golf for 4 days. He said after his Friday round, you know, he's like, you know, I really think I've, like, he kept using the word major. He was saying how that there were major winners in the field and, you know, he feels like he's a major player. I mean, his sights are certainly set on being a major champion. Not that other guys aren't, but man, he's talking about it too. He's putting it out. He's putting it out in the space.
I mean, he contended in the major last year. Wasn't he mm-hmm. like second at the Masters behind Hideki?
I didn't think it was the Masters, but I did think he had a couple of really strong major finishes. I don't know that to be certain, but yeah, I didn't. If it was the, it could have been the Masters. I'm not. I have no idea.
I know he was. He was in the final group, I think. Let me look this up here.
Yeah, like I'm doing the same thing right now.
Yeah, he was second in the Masters.
He was second at the Masters. Okay.
As a debutante too, which is really impressive for that course.
That is usually something you bet against, right?
Yes, I will always do that. And I think, you know, long term, I will make more money or avoid losing money by that.
Anything else from the Farmers before we take it to Pebble Beach?
Yeah, I hate to bring up a bad memory because at the time it was a great memory, but I'm in my car driving. And I, you know, on the Jason Day hole out for Eagle, and I just immediately text you, you know, voice text you, like, I would love to have seen your reaction.
Absolute ape, dude. I went bananas. I was hooting and hollering and screaming. And right before he hit that shot, too, the TV coverage, they're like, you know, Zalatoris had kind of laid up to a pretty safe spot in the middle of that green. And they're like, well, Jason Day's two back now. He's got to be a little more aggressive. And he put that ball behind the pin, and it zipped and spun back in there. And, yeah, I mean, and the thing is, too, I mean, we talked about some other guys lipping things out. That thing spun back dead center as if he put it right where he knew the putt line, like the fall line, it would go in. Certainly he didn't, but, I mean, he was putting it in that place, giving that shot a chance to drop. I went absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. Probably more so crazy than I did yesterday when the Bengals won because I didn't know what to say. I had gambled and had some good shots go my way before, so I knew to just start screaming and hooting and hollering and making a scene.
Okay, so you mentioned, yeah, I guess that's what I should ask you. When McPherson hits that field goal, and, you know, there's no penalties, no timeouts, game is over, what were you like? Were you in just screaming? Were you in tears of joy? Were you just, like, taking a minute, like, wait, did this just really happen?
I was relatively quiet. So I was with a crew of about 10 adults plus kids. So I was over at Dan Klaskin's house and, I wasn't too crazy. I was high fiving people and whatever. I was freaking out inside, but I wasn't really jumping around or screaming. That came shortly after. In the moment, I just kind of stood there. Like, the first thing I do, I guess, I don't know if it's Bengal fandom, NFL fandom. I'm like, all right, wait for the flag, wait for whatever's going to stop this from happening and, you know, cause a re-kick, a replay, whatever it might be. Then it didn't. And, then people are just grabbing me, hugging me, screaming, hooting and hollering. And, you know, eventually, I'm sure you can tell my voice isn't great today. I started to hoot and holler a little bit myself.
Actually, your voice sounds pretty normal.
Okay, well, that's good. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, dude. It's like, as we talked about it a little bit last week, you know, like you talk about the law of averages and just sheer numbers, and they're way overdue to have been in the AFC Championship game, to win the AFC Championship game. They're way overdue to win a Super Bowl. When you talk about sheer numbers, that's taking talent out of the mix. But, you know, it still is almost like, wow, it's about time. I don't even know if I've completely grasped it. apparently I had some friends that have already been down to the pro shop, got their AFC championship gear. I don't know if I want to buy that or just wait for the real, real good stuff. But I was like, I was thinking about going to the pro shop and just checking things out. He sent me a picture of the line. It was around the wall, outside. I'm like, okay, I'm not going. But I think the like just disbelief, maybe that would have put me in a little bit more of like, oh my gosh, it's really happening. If I'd have been around 100 Bengals fans and we were all buying stuff that said 2022 AFC championship. I don't know. I mean, maybe it doesn't say the year, but maybe that would have put me more in a state of belief. I'm not so sure. I'm still like, even as I'm trying to work out getting Super Bowl tickets, I'm not so sure that I still believe I'm in the process of doing it.
I get that.
Hopefully in about 10 years from now, when the Bengals are on Super Bowl 4 or 5, you know, and Burrow's got a fistful of rings like Tommy Brady, then I'll be able to, you know, really appreciate it more and understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think like when the Bears made the Super Bowl in 2006. I mean, I was ecstatic. But there was also a slow buildup in that game that, you know, they had gotten a pretty good lead on the Saints, and It was coming, you know, it was coming, whereas yours was more of just a back-and-forth instant, had to go to overtime type of game.
Yeah, it went from, oh my gosh, they're going to get destroyed and embarrassed, and yeah, like, I mean, if you want to go through the whole game, in the first half, I'm thinking, well, you know, they beat a Raiders team that was a rudderless ship, and then they beat a Titans team that got the one seed with smoke and mirrors, and the two best teams really were the two teams that played the week before in Buffalo and Kansas City. And then the Bengals performed on the field, and they were like, nah, dude, don't think that's not the way you think anymore. That's not the way being a Bengals fan is. But I'm absolutely thinking that as the first half is winding down, especially before the Bengals got on the board, and it was 21-3. Well, they're on the board, but right, it was 21-3. And I'm like, oh man, this is a little bit of the evidence of them not, you know, them getting a favorable draw to this point, rather than, not to say they didn't earn their way, but you know what I mean? Like, right. they benefited by Buffalo and Kansas City having to play them both. And I still think with the Bengals going to the Super Bowl, they benefited by not having to knock off both of those teams in the same playoff push. But that was my mindset at the first half. And then as the second half started to wear on, I was like, all right, they have acquitted themselves well. They didn't embarrass themselves. And then all of a sudden I'm like, damn, they might win this thing. And lo and behold, they did.
Yeah, I should have live bet them at halftime, because, you know, once they got that stop of Kansas City to where Kansas City didn't get any points to end the half, I was like, that could have been some momentum there.
When the Bengals, now keep in mind, I live in Kentucky, which is not a legal gambling state, so I would have had to go to Indiana. So I have to make a trip to make my bets.
Right.
I look at but I always have the website up. So I look at the live number, and it was minus 20 for the Chiefs when they were winning by 18. And I thought, man, I'd be all over the Chiefs side of that right now. You're telling me that the Chiefs are only going to – you're telling me the Chiefs only have to win the rest of the game 3-0? I would have been all over Chiefs minus 20 at that point. See, I'm glad I wasn't.
I would have been all over Bengals plus 20. Like, there's no way this game – there's no way Kansas City completely blowing them out.
Now, that's when it was an 18-point game. So when I don't know what the number was at half when it was an 11-point game. At that point, I was believing again.
Right. But no.
Well, anyway, that's my Bengals take. I forget how exactly we derailed to that, somewhere along the lines of
when I asked you about your Jason Day reaction.
Oh yeah, the reaction. Yeah, that was a lot louder. Of course, I was the only one hooting and hollering because I was sitting in the parking lot office where I do my part time gig. We were waiting to go out for a late night concert, I was the only one really hooting and hollering. I did tell the crew if Jason Day won, I'd buy like, you know, several rounds of beer. So they were invested, but not nearly as invested as I was.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, at that point, outside of Rose kind of hanging around, I was rooting for you with Day. Like, that would have been such a great hit for you at 90-1. And
yeah.
But
and I went, and I'm doing 10-10 now instead of 5-5. So it would have been 90-1 at $10 instead of the previous. I decided with the inflation and in the world, Skeeter, I just bumped everything. $5 lineups instead of $3 now, $10 bets instead of $5. That's where we're at in the world.
Hey, whatever works for you. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you got to figure out what works for you. And for me in DFS, I think I'm, at least for football, I'm going to try 5 lineups for golf, because that seems to be working at least through 2 weeks. So why stop?
And as we're talking about our future bankroll management, I can tell you that for better or worse, Skeeter, I've already decided in all, and I'm not calling the players a major because it's not a major, but when it comes to DFS contests, because actually I was looking at the crown accumulation thing. So they're doing the major masher again on DraftKings, yep, where if you play one lineup in each 20 events, so they're counting the players. So I'm counting the players where they also run a Millie Maker. I think I'm just going to do it. Each one of those five tournaments, I'm just going to do 10 Millie Maker lineups at $20 instead of just a couple.
Yeah.
So I've decided to donate $1,000 to DraftKings this year. I just want to let you know that I'm putting it out there.
I mean, they're very appreciative, but I mean,
I'm sure they are. Whoever wins that Millie Maker is going to be glad I kept it full.
Yeah, I'm sure you're not going to go 0-5 in every single, or 0-10 in every single major.
I would surely hope not. We'll see. But I decided, because that was one of the things, right? Like you've had some good hits and I had a couple good hits. I'm like, you know what? I enjoy doing this rather than taking that money and buying or spending it. Well, let's just put it back in. Let's put it back into the fund. That way, if I don't win, I didn't like buy something and I spent the money. I just spent the money.
Right. But you know, it's 4 days of entertainment.
That's correct. And this was a good 4 days of entertainment this past week. I think we're in for... Well, are we in for another good 4 days of entertainment?
I don't know.
Let's get into the Pebble Beach Pro-Am here. And let's I guess, start by talking about the fact that it is a Pro-Am. So last year it wasn't, right, because of the coronavirus. This year I do believe it is going to be a Pro-Am again, and it's going to be the three-course rotation before a 54-hole cut and then a final round on Sunday, right?
Yeah. I want to double check something on this because there was always some weird cut rules on this one in the past. I don't know if it still is that or not. So as I'm looking that up, yeah, it's a three course rotation. Monterey Peninsula, Spyglass Hill, and then Pebble Beach. Everybody play the rounds, one round each course the first 3 days. And then final rounds at Pebble. If you're looking for showdown or each day kind of, if you're going to play that route, Monterey Peninsula is the easiest of them. But it's not like when we saw 2 weeks ago at the American Express where La Quinta was by far the easiest, then Nicholas Tournament, then the Stadium Club. Like, it's similar that all three courses are scoreable. But it's not like there's a dominant La Quinta as the for sure easiest one. I mean, here Monterey Peninsula is the easiest, but it's not the gap it was at the American Express.
So, I'm glad you bring that up too. Let me jump in real quick because I thought the same thing with last week's tournament with the Wednesday Thursday on the North and South course. So when I was playing the Thrive contest, like I really looked, I made sure I knew exactly which court, not exactly like there was one or more than two, but I made sure I knew which course each player was on before I decided which piece of the prop I wanted to take it at. And actually that day, I forget what I finished, but I won like $105 on the $20 entry. So that was the only day I did good on Thrive, and that was just attacking the course as much as the player.
Right. Yeah, I should have said that. I should have said that because, yeah, the North, just because it's 500 yards shorter, does that. So, I mean, I think you can play the same thing for Thrive or Showdown. Focus mainly on Monterey Peninsula, but again, it's, you know, you can mix in other ones. That being said, if it's a day where there's decent wind, Spyglass is the one that has the most trees and is most protected from the wind. Like, they have a couple holes on the coast, but the trees will block it. So if you get one of those 15, 20, 25 mile per hour days, it might not be a bad idea to stack Spyglass.
Now, when we look at stats, is there, with three different courses, I mean, I know Pebble Beach is not the longest course in the world. Is there a set of statistics that you can really hone in on, given the three different course rotation?
Yeah, I mean, that's another one that's just kind of educated guess. So, I mean, I kind of go the generic tee to green, birdies are better, like, because, I mean, these are going to be easier pins for the amateurs. But since all three of them are kind of short, I'm kind of looking at the proximity from like 100 to 125, 125 to 150, kind of that wedge range. Just kind of taking a look at that par 5 strokes gained, because that's where, again, a lot of the scoring is going to happen at. I mean, birdies are better, I think. I like, because, you know, there are some eagleable holes. I think, you know, 6 at Pebble, the uphill par 5, Number two, I think, should be pretty eagleable. That's the one I play as a par four for the U.S. Open, but other than that, it's like a 520-yard par five. It's a tough hole, but it's not real long. And then, of course, 14 and 18, you're probably not going to eagle those two holes. But I think one of the courses, Monterey or Spyglass, has a high eagle rate for a couple of the holes. So there's some eagles involved. But it's going to be your ball strikers who can make a putt. These are like the smallest greens on tour. So I think really looking at being able to hit a green in regulation, give yourself a chance. And, you know, since it's 6,800 yards, 7,000 yards, it's not real long. So any type of game can play. I mean, if you look at the past winners, we've had Nick Taylor win. We had Berger win last year. Mickelson's won. Ted Potter Jr. Dustin Johnson's dominated this course. Gary Woodland won a U.S. Open here. So lots of different styles. Basically open to anybody. You just got to get a hot putter.
And just to, I guess, to the point, too, because you're talking about, like, certain places might have more eagle opportunities. The pins and the tee boxes will stay the same for all 3 days to start before the cut. Correct. So that all three, it's the same for everyone as they move through all 54 holes, right?
Correct, yeah. And we kind of saw that at the American Express, how that kind of, some of the edges had gotten a little worn out, and I think... Or maybe it's just when Rob was putting that, you know, he kept burning so many edges, and you almost wonder on a, you know, if it had, you know, if they've changed the holes locations, if maybe those one or two more of those would have gone in.
Anything else we want to look at before we jump into the field?
I don't think so. It's not a strong field. The better field's over in Saudi Arabia. That's where a lot of the big stars are at. So this is kind of a weaker field, and you'll kind of see that a little bit in the pricing when we get to the nines and the eights, but there's still enough names here, and after all, it's Pebble Beach. Like, you know, it's still going to be a pretty neat visual.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly going to be enjoyable to watch if it's freezing cold, as it most likely will be here in the Midwest.
I mean, I'm getting anywhere from 8 to 14 inches of snow, could be a little bit more, too, starting Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, and it's supposed to all the way through Thursday, so I don't think I'm going anywhere Thursday. I'm gonna have to do some online teaching, but outside of that, I will be watching.
Just make sure you have the TV not inside the camera view of your computer and the muted volume, so nobody knows you're watching golf while you're teaching, man.
That's not happening. Like where I sit at for my, you know, it's against a wall with a couple with a poster, a couple things, and my TV is far enough away that I can still see it, and it'll be muted, and I'll just enjoy the sights of Pebble.
Beautiful. Well, let's get into this field if we should.
Yep.
Let's do it. We'll start at the top, just four players in the 10K plus tier, and it's Patrick Cantlay at 11-2, Will Zalatoris is 10-8, Daniel Berger's 10-5, Jordan Spieth 10-3. Skeeter, you got a favorite in this tier.
I do, and it's really just comes down to price, because I like all, you know, I think there's a strong case for all four. I have a surprising fade who I did not think I was going to, but it's not a real strong one either. But my favorite play here is going to be Berger at 10-5. I mean, defending champion, he rated out so well here last year. Number one in approach over the last 36 rounds, number two tee to green. 11th in proximity from 125 to 150. Putting can be an issue, but I just don't know why he's 300 cheaper than Zalatoris. I don't get that. So, Berger, who has the better pedigree, I think is the clear standout here. A $700 discount for Cantlay might need that more down towards the bottom or the mid-tier, but Berger just seems to be the one I really enjoy with a price. Betting's a different story.
Yeah, I actually can't argue with that. I'm going to say Spieth is my favorite in this tier. I really don't know that I'm going to get into this tier a lot. Because if I start to find some 6K players later in the week, right now I can't tell you I'm in love with anybody. If I start to find them, it might change. But I'm going to go Spieth because he's got a great history here. And he seems, you know, I feel like he's become a reliable-ish player again. I mean, he's always Jordan Spieth. He's always going to miss some fairways and whatnot, but his course history here, very good as well. So he's my favorite, but I'm not like, I'm not going to have him in 50% of my lineups like I had John Rahm last week.
Right. He's my fade.
Okay.
Just, but it's not a strong fade. Like, he obviously loves Pebble Beach. It actually fits very well. It just, he's lost strokes on approach in four straight events. That's just my only concern here.
No argument. My number two is Berger. I'm just not ready. Look, I want to play Cantlay, and he's played good here, but I just, if he doesn't win, I just don't know if he's worth the 11-2. So
yeah.
I made Berger my number two because he's cheaper.
No, well, I agree with you there, even though, now that being said, I think Cantlay has like an impeccable history here, or at least recently.
It's good, yeah. It's good. He's not one here, unlike Berger and Spieth, though.
Yeah, third and 11th the past 2 years. Spieth was... that is... A win, four top tens, and a couple other top 25s. His worst finish was 45th in 2019. So, I mean, that makes... It does make a lot of sense. Berger, first and fifth in the past 2 years. His only appearance in 2010 was 10, or 2015 was 10th, so... Yeah, like, I get why people are playing Spieth. I actually thought I was going to be on him. I just don't like him as much as others. I almost kind of wish there were a couple other bigger names here to drive Spieth's price down.
Yeah, no argument with you. Who are you going with the number two here after Berger?
I mean, I'm going to say Zalatoris, and that's mainly more of a betting thing. Because I found a 22-1, or... No, that's somebody else. Sorry. I think I got 18-1 on Zalatoris. Yeah, 18-1 on DraftKings Sportsbook. That just seemed for this field like that's a pretty good number. But Berger's 10-1. So, I mean, it's interesting how the odds, you know, on DraftKings, you know, Berger's third in DraftKings price, but now he's a clear second choice in the betting market.
That could be because Berger's won, Zalatoris hasn't, right? Zalatoris hasn't shown he can win yet, even though he was obviously incredibly close just a couple of days ago.
Right, so I don't know if I play Zalatoris in DFS. Maybe I will because, you know, I get a bet on him, but it just feels like he's a better bet. Berger's a better DraftKings play just when you factor in current prices.
I think I'm fading Willie Z, and the only reason I think I'm doing that is because he's the Berger and Spieth I like better at the price. Cantlay, if I'm paying up, I like better. Nothing against Zalatoris. Maybe I'm wondering if there's a little bit of a hangover from the playoff and, you know, the pressure of playing in the final round on Sunday. Not that he really showed a whole lot of, you know, he outplayed Jason Day, who he played with in that final round. And, you know, he outplayed Rye too, frankly. I'm not going to pay 10-8 for him this week in this field.
Yeah.
But again, as much as I don't have a strong favorite, I don't have a strong fade either.
Right, like this would be a weird week, and I'm not sure I'm there yet, but if I found like a mid-tier core that I really like, then I could almost swap these guys in and out, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to happen, and we'll go to the 9Ks, and that's not exactly the mid-tier yet, but it's getting closer, and we get some more names, we get some more options, and we'll start at the top, Jason Day. Considerably higher price than a week ago at 9,900. Mad McNeely 98, Justin Rose 96, Cam Tringali 95, Seamus Power 94, Matt Fitzpatrick 92, Kevin Streelman 91, Kevin Kisner 9K even. Interesting. Day and Rose were 7K plays last week. Now they're at the top of the 9K board. They both played well. Maybe has something to do with the field too. Is there a favorite for you in this tier?
Yeah, I mean, you know, had to take last year off from it, but I'm jumping back on Justin Rose. I found a 22-1 on him, and in this field, he feels like he's a top five player, so I will gladly take 22-1. He gained 5.5 shots on approach last week at the Farmers, has been putting decently well, his irons have been good. Just all around, like, this kind of was like Justin Rose from a few years ago, or at least he's starting to trend that way. So I like that. He's fourth in opportunities gained over past 36 rounds, 11th in putting, 20th in birdies or better, 25th from 125 to 150. Really doesn't have anything wrong. 9,600, I mean, I know McNeely's been playing well and Day has a great history here, but I'm not sure why either of them are higher than Rhodes.
You know, I mean, Rose, look, are you ready for an announcement? An official announcement.
Oh, yeah, I think I am.
The vampire has been removed from the banned list.
Yes.
I mean, that was clear, I would think, in it, without having said it, when I sent you a text with the lineup, which is always the kiss of death when I screenshot a lineup with 18 holes remaining and send it to someone, as it was again this week.
I mean,
I did it to you
2 weeks ago, and it wasn't the kiss of death for me.
It was not. You're correct. It's only the kiss of death when I do it. But the vampire was in my best lineup this week, and he is certainly off my banned list. He's not my favorite play this week. But he is off the ban list.
Yeah, no, I get it. And let's see, he does have a 6 here in the past, so.
I think I'm still going to go with Seamus Power.
Yeah?
The course history here isn't great. He missed the cut last year, but he had 2 top 40s out of his 4 tournaments here. And he's just playing some great golf. And I could be wrong, but I would think with big names like Jason Day and Justin Rose popping a week ago, that they may garner a little more attention. This may be, I don't know, are we going to get some more casuals this week because it's Pebble Beach and football's over for the first time? I don't know. I'm hoping so. I'm hoping that Power comes with a little bit of an ownership discount along with the fact that he's just been playing great, dude.
Okay, so I just looked on Fantasy National. It's early on a Monday. In the top tier, everybody's on Cantlay and Berger, so Zalatoris is actually the lowest, is the least popular. When I get to this 9K tier, it's basically McNealy Tringali, which...
Ugh. Really?
Okay, I'll play Rose. I mean, Rose has decents. Streelman has up there. Seamus is kind of in that mid-tier, so, I mean, he's not wildly popular, but he's not... I mean, he's about average.
Yeah, rest assured, I like me some Kevin Streelman. I'm glad we're talking about him. Let's not talk about him while we make our draft picks in our league that has a slow draft ongoing.
He's not in consideration for me, don't worry.
He's definitely close to consideration for me at this point. But yeah, Kevin Streelman, I mean, he's not my number two. I think Mad McNeely's my number two, but Streelman's going to be in consideration. Like, this is a tier. This is why between Day, Rose, McNealy, Power, Streelman, I do think that this is a tier I'll be going into that keeps me really from getting into the 10K tier.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. Like, McNealy is going to be the most popular. I mean, good history. He's been hit. I mean, his recent form on short on like hard small greens is kind of what has got people's attention. Second and fifth the past 2 years, so people are just going to go right back to him. He's in decent form, I believe, as I pull up his game log.
Yeah.
30th at Farmers, 27th at Hawaii, 19th at Houston, 11th at Mayakoba, 25th at Zozo. So he's not doing anything wrong. I guess I might end up just, if he's going to be this popular, I might just go against him because I'm looking here and I don't see a top 10 in his recent form. He has some really nice finishes, you know, second and fourth in that. But if I'm paying $9,800, I at least want to be feeling like he's got a pretty decent chance in the top 10, not a decent chance. So it's splitting hairs, especially when I like Rose better. And then, you know, Power's one that I mentioned that I have starred as well. So I don't know what to do with Kevin Streelman because I love him at Pebble every single year. But man, his form has not been great. And 9,100, I was hoping he was coming in high sevens, low eights, not 9,100.
Nah, not in this field. Not when you see where Day and Rose and those guys went. Now, let me ask you this. If we got Kevin Streelman and we got him paired up with Larry Fitzgerald, don't we just go ahead and chalk him in?
I don't know. Like that. This is one of those things I really have to think about because okay. There are certain names on this course that I play every year, and he is one of them. I don't know what to do here.
I am certainly interested in him. Did you give me an official number two after the vampire? You don't have to.
It's McNealy, but again, okay. His popularity could get out of control that I'm not sure that I think I could find enough reasons to play game theory and fade him.
If he's not your fade and your number two all at once, who are you fading?
I think it's McKisner. Even though it's a short course, I don't think he has a terrific history here, which is odd. I would, you know, you'd think that he would be This would suit him well. Let me pull him up.
It would suit him well, right? Little short course where kids can get after it. You would think this would be a Kisner course.
38, 28, missed cut, 10th missed cut. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's not, I mean, seems like it would fit him, but maybe he just doesn't like POA. It's not in the southeast, so. Yeah, Kisner for me just doesn't really jump out. But, and of course, I'm looking at Kevin Streelman's course history. I'm like, good grief, 6 straight top 20s here. Like,
oh. Yeah, I'm using him, dog.
I don't know if I can't. Yeah, boy, that's going to be a decision for me.
I mean, I told you 5 guys out of the 8 I really like. This seems like a Kiz course, and he's the cheapest. There's only 2 other guys left. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick, I mean, he's supposed to play a coastal course decent. His history here is eh. Cam Tringali's been either great or miscut here in the last run. I guess I'm fading Tringali. I'm not really trying to tell you that it's either top 10 or a miscut, but second cut, 7th cut, 3rd. Is cut coming here for this time? I don't know.
And he was 7th here last year, but I mean, I'll just do it because if he's going to be the 2nd most popular in this range, like, I'll pay an extra 100 for Justin Rose, who is a much better historic player.
Yeah, and I like Power as my favorite, the guy below him. So the pricing just fits. I mean, I Cam Dragali could be in the winning lineup given the way he played last week. I'm fading him. It doesn't mean it's the right play.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
All right, let's take it to the 8Ks and got some interesting names in here. 8,900, we start with Ryan Palmer. Lanto Griffin, 88. Christian Bezuidenhout, 87. Why do the South Africans have those weird last name vowel combos like Oosthuizen and Bezaden? Like, I almost spelled it right when I thought, just because, I don't know, that's a tantrum for another
day. It's also, I believe it's actually Christian.
Yeah, there's 2 A's in it, yes.
Yeah, I don't.
Which, by the way, I spelled it right when I drafted him, but I did have to look it up.
Yeah, and you made note of that too, which I appreciate.
It's correct. So Bezuidenhout at 87, Brian Harmon's 86, Tom Hoagie is 85, Mackenzie Hughes, 84, Mito Pereira, 83, Denny McCarthy, 82, The Seagull, Charlie Hoffman, by God, let him stay healthy, 8,100. Matt Jones at 8K even. Skeeter, who you got? Who's your favorite here?
So I don't know if I have a favorite in this tier. If I did, it's probably, I'm just going to keep going back to Lanto. 3rd of the American Express 2 weeks ago. 30th last week. Had a couple rounds, sub 70, including a nice 65 on Sunday to kind of vault him to 30th. Had a top 10 here last time he played at Pebble Beach. So, doesn't really do anything wrong. 9th, birdies are better. 25th in approach, 26th putting. 13th, proximity to 125. Just doesn't do real much wrong at 8,800. I think he kind of makes sense.
I'm going to go with Matt Jones. You know I want to go with the guy ahead of him, but he had to withdraw last week, did the Seagull with a back injury. And while he finished great here last year, he's not great here annually. So I'm going to go with Matt Jones, a guy who, if you look on the surface, hasn't been playing terribly good lately. But his course history here is pretty good. 34th, 5th, 53rd, missed cut, 23rd, 11th, 7th, 45th. So he's had a pretty decent run here. If you look a little deeper at his missed cuts here, because he's missed 4 of the last 5 cuts, as Matt Jones, but he was even at Farmers. The cut was 3 under. Like, he just missed it. He was -2 at Sony, and that was a birdie fest. He missed that by a little bit, but he was under par still. RSM, missed the cut, but he was -1. Mayakoba, missed the cut, but he was -2. He's been at or under par. He was even par this week and under par in the other 3 missed cuts, and he was 3rd at Tournament of Champions, so there was some good form in there as of late with good course history here. I'll hope those missed cuts scare some people off, and he becomes a really a low ownership play.
Okay. I'm not on him, but you're making some very good cases that, you know, if you're missing cuts shooting under par, I mean, that's a decent sign.
Who, you said Griffin. If you don't go Griffin, where else are you going?
Well, Seabez is interesting because he's #1 in my model. 2nd in putting, 5th and 6th in a wedge range, is 12th in par 5 strokes gained. But then I look at his finishes, 46th, 40th, 17th, missed cut, 15th, past 5. He's gaining on approach. I don't know what to do with him. Like, he rates out very well in the model. He's putting up solid finishes, but do I want to pay $8,700 for that? I don't know. So
yeah,
that one's, I don't know. It's a conundrum. That's a problem for me.
Yeah, I don't know. He's on my radar. I'll probably use him, whether it's one, you know, I'm not going to have him in 40%. You know, he won't be in 4 or 10 of my lineups. He'll probably be in one, though. I'm with you. I think my number two, I'm going to go with Mackenzie Hughes. Course history here isn't great, but he did have a 10th place finish in 2017. And Mackenzie Hughes has been playing some pretty good golf, really, for the last year almost. He did not make the cut at the Farmers, but he was, again, minus two. And then you go back to his decent finish at the fall. Not even a decent finish, a really strong finish for him. So at 8,400, I'm going to give Mackenzie Hughes a run here as my other.
Yeah, I can see that. Mino Pereira's, he was 25th last week. He's there. And then we have Tom Hoagie, who was second in the Amex, another, pro-am type event 2 weeks ago. And
he was part of my winning
team. He rates out really well in approach, opportunities, birdies, proximity from 100-125. Putter is interesting. But, yeah, I don't know what to do in this 8K tier. I have those four guys starred. I don't know. I just got to kind of think how I want to build this lineup.
Our guy, Ryan Palmer, who's at the top, had a pretty good week last week. Does he do anything for you?
No, I don't know.
Course history here is not what it is at Torrey Pines, for the record.
Right. No, he's kind of in that dead range, I guess, for me, or I think I just like Lonto for 100 cheaper.
I'm trying to find a fade here, and I don't know if I really have one. I mean, I'm not going to tell you I'm fading the Seagull, but I'm worried about his back history. Like, he would be the logical fade. Because, again, if you want to make a point about the field here, Charlie Hoffman was 7,100 last week, withdrew with a back injury, and his price went up $1,000.
Yeah. I mean, no, he's
What's
my fade.
What's up with that, dude?
I don't know, but he's my fade until I want to see how he bounces back from the injury or so. Did he have COVID? I thought I heard.
No, he had a back. It was a back problem. Okay. So he hurt his back, I think, at Mayakoba. That's the last tournament he's played. He was supposed to play this week and withdrew because he didn't say it was right. He is currently in the field, but we hope he stays in the field.
Yeah.
Well, I do anyway.
Well, of course, man. It's good for the show.
It's good for my soul. Well, all right. Brutal. I guess that means I don't have a fade in 8K.
It's fine.
Like, I look at Denny McCarthy. I'm like, yeah, he's not great course history. Boy, is he playing good. Brian Harman just had a great tournament two weeks ago in a coastal pro-am. I'm like, dang, maybe he makes some sense here. I don't know. So I don't know that I have an 8K fade because I refuse to say that it's,
I'll do it for you. I'm fading the Seagull because I just want to see what he's like.
Yeah, 70-1, ABC. You know I'm betting him.
Of course.
All right, should we take it to 7K?
Yes.
Let's do it. We got a long list of players, some names that have moved up in price, just like the rest of the board. Skeeter, is there a name that shines for you?
I mean, I'm just... Look, this probably isn't the most logical reason, but I remember a U.S. Open here a couple years ago, and not that I had great lines, but one of the things I got right was Ches Reavie, who was, like, right around this price range, and he came up and finished, I believe he was T3.
Third? I was going to say third, too. That's my guess.
Fourth in approach, 13th tee to green, 17 opportunities gained past 36 rounds. Putting not great. Birdies not phenomenal. Par 5 strokes gained not great either. But he's 7,400. He has this tendency just to kind of pop up from time to time. His history here, the past 4 years, 16th, 25th, 38th, and 2nd, and that doesn't include the 3rd of the U.S. Open. It's a short course, should fit him well. Usually plays well, Phoenix is kind of an interesting one. Because this is the first time this is before Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of been hit or miss there, but 7,400, he at least has good upside, a good history here, has kind of popped up to these shorter courses before. I think he makes decent sense to me.
He doesn't make decent sense. He makes great sense. He's not my favorite play if he's your favorite play, but he's going to be in plenty of lineups for me. I mean, it seems like, and as I went through the course history, I don't know if it's because it's a pro-am and a comfortability factor with that, but boy, it seems like guys that play good here do, and guys that don't. So
yeah.
This feels like a place to lean. more on course history than a normal week. And then you couple that with the fact that a lot of these guys have only played 1 or 2 weeks since they came off the break. So your like recent form is still somewhat of a mystery. It seems like leaning on course history here is a really good idea.
I don't even think looking back at the American Express, because it's a similar format, I don't think that's a horrible idea either.
No, I agree with you, man. There's a difference it's got to be a completely different event when you're pseudo trying to be an ambassador to pro golf and, you know, the sponsors as you play as a pro-am versus simply playing with the other pros. I mean, it's got to be a different animal no matter what.
Well, and even in the case of a Jason Day, who's not exactly the fastest player, well, that's kind of the way this is. These are slow rounds.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, you can hide slow play behind the amateurs, right?
Right.
I'm going to go course history play and go Matthew Neesmith as my play here.
Yeah.
Coming off of his 34th. Now, you make the Farmers comment, or I'm sorry, the American Express comment. Well, he missed the cut there, although he was 5 under, had a bad round 3. But he was 34th at the Farmers, and he was 16th last year and 11th the year before here. So I'm going to go with Matthew Neesmith as a cheap play at 7,300. But I'm with you on Chez too, man.
Putting, of course, the only thing wrong with Neesmith, but he ranks 3rd approximately from 100 to 125, 17th in approach. 21st birdies are better. Everything else kind of fits. So I get that one. Lucas Glover was good at Sony. He was decent in the American Express. He's starting to play a little bit better, too. 7,800, I don't mind him. And if it's a coastal course, short course, Russell Knox also at 7,800. Really good wedge player, good approach numbers, good tee to green. The putter, of course, is a nightmare at times, but I feel like he's actually played well here before. Let me see if I remember correctly or if I'm just making this up. No, 7th last year, missed cut in 2020, 14th, 15th. Good history here, 7,800. I think it's a fair price on him. Poa's not a horrible putting surface by his standards, but you know he did lose 6 strokes putting the RSM, and he missed a cut in the American Express mainly because he lost 1.7 putting.
You ready for another announcement?
Uh-oh. Is he on the ban list?
No, Lucas Glover is off of the ban list.
I erased the ban list.
I did. I took him off and he got right back on. Wasn't that the he was like the ambassador at the place we never played and
Palmetto.
Yeah, and then he missed the cut there when everybody in the world played him and he went right back on the ban list immediate.
So yeah, he never made the ban list for me because that was a game theory. I'm not playing this guy this week and it worked out for you.
You love him for that, right?
I mean, I don't remember having a huge week, but I think I cashed. I was like, well, at least I got that part right.
Yeah, so Glover's off the ban list for me. I will use him as well.
So who's still on the ban list?
Nobody is on the ban list. We have wiped it clean. Oh. No one's on it right now. People will find their way there. Maybe Peter Malnati's on the ban list after I drafted him in our league last year and he never made another cut, but I don't know if he's good enough to like qualify for the ban list.
That's fair.
So what about Aaron Rye, man? We got to talk about this guy. Another good event, finishes 6th at Farmers. I mean, is this a player on the rise that you want to think about using? I didn't mean a pun there with his last name in the rise, but Aaron Two Gloves has certainly got my attention.
He had one bad round at the American Express because he lost 6 shots on approach. I don't know if he had a bad Sunday, but everything, I mean, his approach numbers have been fantastic. Off the tee is good. Around a green is a little bit of an issue. That does concern me on these, you know, short, on these small greens. Mm. But I have no problem going back to Aaron Rye. Guy I might need to dig into, another Euro guy, Minwoo Lee.
Dude, I've got questions for you about him in our draft, too, because he's an Australian player, right?
Yes.
And so, yeah, he's on my list, too. He was on that list I talked about with Peters and Westwood. He's on that list, too, Brett.
Get Westwood off that list. I took him. He might go.
Oh, that's right. But, yeah, I'm interested in him, too. So, he has one tournament here, was a missed cut last year, but his world golf ranking suggests that he's somebody to at least have an opinion on.
Yeah. I'm just going to quickly mention a couple other names I have started. Andrew Putnam's starting to kind of return to a form we saw a couple years ago, and I feel like he's a decent on shorter courses. Joel Dahman ranks really well in all the approach numbers. Birdies are better. Surprisingly, not a great par 5 guy, so that was interesting to see. One of my last cuts last week, and boy, he hung around Pat Perez. 7,300. I was watching him up the, like, you gotta be kidding me. How, you know, I faded him. Finished sixth of the Farmers. Good approach, good putting, so.
Did you know his dad was the starter at Torrey Pines?
I did not.
Yeah, his dad was the one announcing everyone's name. So when he did Pat, he said, please welcome on the tee from wherever in California, maybe there, San Diego, my son. And that's all he said. He didn't even say Pat Perez. He said, my son. He also, somebody must have slipped him a dollar or two to call Brooks Koepka Bruce Koepka in day two after he dyed his hair blonde. Koepka laughed at it. He thought it was funny, so he either had the okay or didn't mind it. Yeah, I'm sure Pat told his dad to call him that. But yeah, Pat Perez's dad is a starter at Torrey.
Should have called Brooks Wills Al Torres.
Well, I certainly saw, I don't know if I shared it with you, but I certainly saw the Wills Al Torres on steroids comments for Brooks Koepka. Not steroids, but, right. You know, working out, right? Not anything scandalous, but. Right. I thought that was cool that Pat's dad was there.
A few other names, in you know, you and I spent a couple minutes talking about this guy pre-show, is Sahith Theegala. Like,
he was in my best lineup last week.
He's not rating out great, but I feel like he's had a decent start to 2021, and I think there's some pedigree there, so he's on the list. I don't think I'll get to Brendan Todd, but it's a coastal course, short course. That's usually a Brendan Todd special. Scott Piercy has a really good history here at Pebble, so that's something to look at, and then Vaughn Taylor rates out decently well. He's won here. Good approach, good opportunities, gain good wedge numbers. That can usually play for me at 7K.
You don't mention Troy Merritt, who's in this mix. He has three top 25s his last time, three times out here.
Yeah, that's. I don't think I ended up going there, but that is a name that kind of caught my attention to course history. I do have I have one other name once you're done with yours.
That's cool. I was just going to say, Theegala, and look, dude, I mean, I got on him 3 weeks ago when Shane Bacon was talking about him on Golf Today, so I'm not going to act like I've been digging deep into the Pepperdine archives, but he's apparently like a prodigy golf, I don't know if prodigy is the right word, but, you know, a young, hot name from Pepperdine that, yes. You know, as we were talking about, too, you're looking for these young guys that have an emerging season that he could be that guy. I'm on Theegala this week, too, at 7,200.
Yeah, again, I don't know if I play him, but he's at least on my radar.
Who else did you have?
Another course history guy. Scott Stallings has a good history here, but his form right now has been terrible. But Brandon Harkins won the Corn Ferry Tour last week, and he has two top 30 finishes here. His putter can be ice cold, but we kind of saw this a little bit of Chris Kirk. He kind of had to go back to the Corn Ferry. He won and started playing well. I'm not saying we're going to see the same thing on Brandon Harkins, but there's enough there that I don't think he is an awful option.
I've got a real deal fade. Do you have one?
I do not. I guess it'll be Scott Stallings, despite the good course history. His form has just not been good, so I'm avoiding that one. Are you fading a former champion here?
I am.
Is it one that you were high on last week?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Ban list?
Sneds ain't going on a ban list. I'm not betting him again this week, but he was one of the automatic bets that I had lined up last week. He was 100-1, and rest assured, that's not cashing. Yeah, Snedeker's my fade here. Missed the cut last week. Of course, my reasoning for liking him was because he looked good the previous 2 weeks, and now we're going back to a pro-am that he's won. He was 14th at the last pro-am, so maybe I should reconsider. Maybe I'm just salty beans because I had Sneds in several lineups, but I'm fading Sneds.
I mean, in all fairness, this course does seem to be a better fit to him than Torrey Pines does, but... But no, I'm with you. I have no interest in Snedeker, so I'm not going to talk you out of that one.
Maybe that's why you championship the GPPs and I don't, because I'm too emotional. I'm like, oh, he's playing good. I'm playing him.
Let's remember, I've only done this one time ever, and that was 2 weeks ago, so recency bias or whatever. Let's not go thinking that I'm taking down tournaments often enough for that comment.
Yeah, I am thinking it. Okay. I believe, dude, it is us. It is us. It still is us.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Hopefully CJ Uzama gets healthy and it can be him in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Are you ready to go 6K?
Yep.
Are you getting excited about 6K given the way we've kind of just beat up this field already?
No, but again, I think there's some... There's a couple of names that I kind of was like, oh, I don't mind that. I'll be honest, I don't know anything about this guy, but he jumps out on stat miles, and that's Austin Eckroat.
Okay, that's interesting. He's a young gun, right? Is he still at, what, Oklahoma State, or is he gone?
Oh, yeah. Or was he part of that Hovland Wolf team? Was he involved in that one?
I know that he's a young college player. He was on the Walker Cup team last year. I don't know if he was on the Gooch Hovland Wolf team or not, to be honest with you.
Oh, Gooch was on that. I didn't realize Gooch was on that.
Or maybe Gooch was ahead of him, because Gooch did play at Oklahoma State too, but he might have been.
Okay.
Well, actually, I don't know how long Hovland was there, because I can't tell you if I know how many years they each spent there. But I don't know if he was on that team or not. I honestly don't even know for sure if that's where he goes to school, because now I'm getting my like college guys that I've dabbled in trying to figure out confused.
I was thinking Texas, but then again, that's nothing. That's nothing new to make me think. Let's see. Austin Eckroat. Oklahoma State. You're right.
Boom. Boom. I'm Cowboy. So good, I don't even know it.
Cowboy up.
Of course, you don't get paid for knowing where somebody already went. You got to get paid to learn where, to figure out where they're going. That's what I'm trying to do here.
Nice transition.
Yeah, thanks.
So, 37th at Wyndham, 22nd at Bermuda. He missed last week the Farmers, but he's been getting on approach. Looks like he just missed at the Farmers. Lost 1.2 strokes putting, but he just jumps out. Or where's it? Oh, had a decent travelers. Like, he just jumps out with his approach numbers. 15th in approach, 17th opportunities gained. Really good wedge player. Good birdies are better. For 6,800, he kind of hits some of the numbers I want to see. So at that point, I don't hate it.
Are there comp courses? I don't know that we really even discussed that when we got going, because you mentioned Bermuda, Coastal, Short, Wyndham. Is Wyndham Coastal? I don't think Wyndham is.
No, but it's Short. Short. Travelers, is there, maybe?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if we have any, because we didn't really get into that with Pebble. Travelers is one that you have on the comp course list, by the way.
Reavy's one, DJ's one, Spieth is one.
Streelman dominates both, right?
Yes, yeah. But yeah, you know, maybe Sony a little bit. Kuchar's played well both. Oh, that's another name. Is he in this field?
He is. He's in the 7Ks, and I wrote him down but didn't mention him to you. He's high 7Ks, right? And he finished 7th, like, wherever we were, wherever he played at last time. Yeah, Cooch is 76, right under Minwoo Lee, and he was 7th at Sony.
Okay.
Huh. So I wrote him down, but for whatever reason, I guess neither of us just, we bypassed
him. His history sounds good. I sort of thought he would have fit, but, yeah, so I don't know. So, Eckroat kind of jumped out for me from that one. You have a favorite 6K? Because I got other names like Starred, but...
Favorite is a sketchy word down here. I'm going to tell you that my guy's probably Ryan Armour. Good Lord. Short course.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I don't think he's been playing very well, because he rates out really good by model. Maybe it's,
He was 20th at Sony, but it hasn't been particularly great since the Korn Ferry Tour Championship.
Does he have a bad course history here? Because there was something I was like, ugh.
I thought he had a decent course history, which is probably, as I go to look for it, I bet you it's not as good as I was thinking, because the course history pricing on this has been good. He really doesn't. He was 47th, missed a couple cuts, and was 20th. So he's been okay, but certainly not great.
Okay, so that's probably why I was off of him. All right. Another guy that you mentioned last week, I was like, I'm not ready to quite go there. And I think last week you mentioned he was 25th, gain on approach, Doc Redman.
Yeah, it was like maybe 2 weeks ago or whatever. Oh, okay. Because of course it was at Amex when he didn't miss the cut, when he missed the cut. Yes, that I went there.
Okay. And then the other one that really jumps out statistically, you know, I don't know what his history. I don't feel like he has either a long history here, or just has not been, or maybe it's just not great. Actually, no, he's got a 21st and a 10th. Cam Percy at 6,600 rates out really strongly in approach, opportunities gained, and the wedge ranges and tee to green.
I don't know that I have any other. I'm going to write Percy down myself in case I'm get back into the 10K. I don't know if I have any other guys I want to go to. Like Barjone, he dropped the ball last week big time. Maybe I would go back to him, but the plus seven is really, really sketchy from a week ago. He hurt some lineups that I had. Svensson was another guy I was like playing around with. He dropped the ball last week too. So, you know, I don't know. Luke Donald at 6,500. I mean, I know
it's not the heritage,
but 400 to miss the cut at the Amex and was 27 at Sony. I mean, he's shown some good form in the last two times out. If I was diving down, I would be interested in him, but you know how that goes.
Vegas kind of popped a little bit in stat models. I just can't get myself to play him, but that would potentially be one.
Short coastal course, so I could play Brian Gay if I had to.
Yeah.
If I had to.
Chan Kim, stat-wise, has a little bit to him, but I think that's just kind of I'm not sure. That's a small sample size. I'm not sure I want to go there. There was one other guy. James Hahn kind of rates out well in short-term models. Actually, even for 6,700, he rates well across all models. I don't think he does anything spectacular, but he's missed three cuts in a row, but they all look like they've been right on the number. Like, hasn't been playing bad. And he was 27th at Mayakoba, 15th at Zozo before the end of the season, you know, back in the fall. So feels like he might be a tad unluckier. Maybe he's due some positive variance, but outside of that, I don't really have anybody I'm in love with.
Nah, I don't either. I mean, I'm sitting here trying to make a case to myself for Jimmy Walker or somebody else, and I just don't. I don't have it.
Yeah. Are we doing our fades?
Yeah, give me one.
You know, that's always interesting. There's always some older players that end up in this field because sometimes I think they struggle to get them out. If this is the announcer, Peter Jacobson's in this field?
Really? I thought you were going to go with Tom Lehman, who's down there at 6K.
I thought he made a cut recently here. Maybe not. I might not have included him in the course history file because, you know, I didn't expect him to play.
Yeah, I mean, all of his recent history on the DraftKings profile is the Champions Tour.
Yeah. Is that the Peter Jacobson, like, the NBC announcer? Is there some other
random? It would have to be, right? I mean, it does. I guess it doesn't have to be, but I'm guessing. No, probably not. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Champions Tour, Peter Jacobson, so.
Yeah? Well, there's no picture, so when I'm looking at the profile, I'm just assuming it is. Yeah, I mean, I guess it probably is, yeah.
No, but when you shoot 9 over at the Dominion Energy Charity Classic on the Champions Tour, I'm not sure Pebble Beach is exactly going to be
a good spot for him.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably not going to be happening, but you know what? Fill out the field, why not? I actually like him as an announcer on NBC.
And for the guy, he's like tied to the Golden Tee game. So as a pro-am, if you could get with him, you know what I mean? Like he would at least be entertaining for some like bar junkies like me who like to play Golden Tee a lot, or at least I used to. I don't really play it anymore.
There you go.
So I'm fading Adam Svensson, man. I was on him. He actually didn't miss the cut last week. I misspoke. He finished 79th. His weekend, well, not really his weekend because we know how the tournament went. His final two rounds, 79-78 for a plus 10. So I'm off. I'm going to get off that train for a little bit here, Skeeter.
Okay. So you're not betting him top Canadian.
I am not. I already told you I like Mac Hughes in the 8K range as my number two player.
That's fair.
Doesn't mean it's right. Just told you I liked him.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Skeeter, I guess at this point, we take the trip from the DraftKings side of things to the one-and-done side of things. I did okay last week, I guess. I didn't do great, but I did okay. Went with Rom. I guess at this point, because look, I mean, by going with Rom, he was 10% owned, man. Tony Finau was 23% owned. I got to feel like somehow or another people forgot about the Wednesday start and they got to sign Tony Finau. Because when I saw he was 23% owned, I was like, dang. And then for anybody who had hoped to save him for the Northern Trust or whatever, they're probably a little upset about that anyway. But, you know, you got to make the picks if you're not in on time. I assume that was a random assignment, but Rom was 10% owned. I moved all the way up to 1,357 place, Skeeter.
What place did you move up to?
1,357th.
How are you beating me?
I have $462,000.
What place did Rom finish in last week?
T3 for $445,000.
I'm thinking Amex. Because I played Sungjae Im, who was T6. I was happy with that.
He got you a lot more than he got me for the Sony when he didn't make the cut. And Rom was 13%. I said 10. He was 13%.
Rom? Sungjae was only 4%. Okay, I'm sorry. I was confusing my Rom tournaments recently.
That's okay. That's okay. So at any rate, I mean, again, at this point, no matter how good or bad you are off to a start, you're not getting contrarian yet, right?
No.
Like, this is a tournament where being contrarian would be taking Jason Day or Justin Rose or Kevin Streelman, which I don't think I would go that low with Streel.
Streelman would be...
Think people would be on him just because of the history?
Yeah, that feels contrarian a little bit.
How popular is Daniel Berger going to be in his defense?
Could be very popular. I just saw the name. Oh, Maverick McNeely's going to, if he's already highest, projected on DraftKings, he's going to be very popular in one and done. Rose is intriguing. Catch him while he's playing well. Berger interests me.
There's going to be a time when Rose is not playing in the States, right? There's going to be tournaments where he's not here.
Right. I don't know. Berger was my initial thought, maybe Rose, but after that, yeah, that's...
Would you dare use Spieth? I mean, are you saving him for Augusta? Would you dare use Cantlay? Are you saving him for Memorial? Of course, I can't use Rom there, so maybe I'm saving him for that. Would you dare use those guys here?
Oh, you could. I mean, this is the opportunity to get a win. I think that'd be quite fair. Spieth is actually very intriguing.
I won't use the Seagull this week. Use him. I am saving. I'll probably save him for Valero and just be like everyone else. Make sure at least I get money out of him.
Right. Now,
maybe I won't. I don't know.
Contrarian here would be like Russell Knox.
Okay. Which I'm not ready to do. I mean, and I don't think that's a play. I mean, even if you've missed three cuts in a row, you shouldn't get contrarian yet, should you?
No.
Okay. I wouldn't think so, but I guess, to each his own as well.
You got me thinking on Spieth now.
Okay, well, I think the idea is that we're both probably pretty on board with the fact that it's got to be a top-notch option here.
Yeah, I think I just put Rose in for now, but yeah, I want to think this one through.
I might use J-Day while he's playing good.
That's an interesting one, too.
For the same reason you're using Rosie. Because right now, if his back's not bothering him, and you can get some good play out of him, let's get to it.
I mean, and his history here is immaculate, so...
Impeccable, dude. I mean, that's the reason I bet him last week at 90-1, because the course history was good there, too. And I was like, look, man, I remember... using Day, either it was in one and done or for whatever reason, I remember using Day last year at this event and he panned out and then he wasn't really good again for like 3 or 4 weeks. And it was like, man, whether it was the back or whether it was the course, the horse course kind of thing. I don't know what it was, but I was like, man, I'm going to use Day while he had a good time and I'm going to use him in lineups and I may well use him in one and done and just, strike while the iron's hot.
Right. Yeah, no.
Because the putter wasn't hot. That was a little play on words.
That's another intriguing one, Jason Day. That's really interesting.
He's an interesting play here. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. Because again, like you said, big chunk of the top players in the world are across the world on the DP Tour.
Yeah. Good week for doubles, by the way.
Actually, yeah, it would be. It's a good week to watch golf in the morning, too, right?
Yeah, I will have to. I'm gonna have to look at some. Let's see if we can pull up the odds over in Saudi Arabia.
Looked at the ones in the PGA. I have not looked at the ones across the ocean
not,
there.
I've not done that yet either. So let's see. That's not it.
And I'm trying to find some numbers I really like, and I don't know that I have any I love going to the book. Chez Reavy is 80-1 at my book, and that certainly entertains me.
Yeah, I don't know what, or is Saudi not even, is that's not even a DP Tour?
It might not be. I could be saying it's DP Tour, and I could be wrong. I might be wrong, dude.
Because, I mean, whatever term I'm seeing has Bern Wiesberger at 10-1. I don't think that's...
Oh, yeah, this is it. And it is DP War. It's the Ross Al. No, that's... Well, that's certainly not it, then, dog. That's not it.
No.
Okay, well, then I'm an idiot.
No, but
we
no.
already knew that, so that's cool.
I wonder if they just have that screwed up.
I kind of wonder that, too, because I thought that was the name of this championship, but I could certainly not be correct. It would not be the first time.
Yeah.
Of course, last week when I was trying to find odds, I didn't have – the book only had win odds. They didn't even have the top five, top ten stuff out until – well, heck, we did it Monday, and then I had to go make bets Tuesday. So, yeah, it wasn't even until Tuesday that I could find the odds for anything outside of wins.
So the Saudi International – is it just an exhibition? Oh, it's an Asian tour.
That is very funny that you say that, given where that is in the country. So, or in the country, in the world. So, you know, in the Middle East, right? It's like right there where Africa, Asia, and Europe meet. And I remember like having a conversation with my buddy's now ex-wife who was from Israel. And I asked her what continent Israel was in, and she just looked at me. She's like, "Do I look European?" I'm like, "My bad, dog. Just answer the question for me." So yes, I guess that would make sense. Saudi Arabia is in Asia.
Oh, and DraftKings Sportsbook does not have odds for this one yet, so I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's. I mean, I know there's some political controversy around this, and some people are playing it. Some are just like, "Hey, it's golf," you know, whatever. So I don't know if that has anything to do, but that's weird that that's not on DraftKings Sportsbook yet.
I would agree. That is odd. Yeah, I don't know what the politics are on it. I got out of that a whole long time ago.
Yeah, I have half an idea, but you know, it's not what this podcast is about. I'm also going to be certain I probably don't know enough to hold a logical enough argument. I'm trying to say FanDuel has. They're a little slow on golf, getting golf going.
I can see why. Basketball is hot right now, I guess, with football reaching its waning moments.
Yeah, they don't even have it either. They have the DP World Tour one, which I mean, there's still some names there. Højgaard, Wiesberger, my guy Hautong at 40-1. Oh.
There's names. I don't know how wonderful they are,
well,
though.
No, but I mean, Danny Willett's there. Hey, your guy Dubuisson is there, 55-1. There you go.
I like to see him get going, dog. I'd like to see him get going. I want to see that magical short game back in the world.
There you go. The day Dubuisson double.
The two that went to extra holes at Dove Mountain 10 years ago.
Yeah, there you go. That's a James Adams double special, I feel.
That is kind of a James Dub, isn't it? We might have to take a peek at that. That might be worth a buck or two.
Absolutely.
Because that was that's one of those tournaments that really like turned me into a watching golf fan. That finish was so dang good, man. I was late for a WrestleMania party because of that. That tells you how good that finish was.
I think one of the ones that got me golf was, again, shocker when I mentioned John Deere Classic, Spieth's win.
Yeah, I could see that. The first one. I could see that. You got to get your boy back there.
I mean, they have moved in the schedule, so it's not the week before the Open now, but it's the week before the Scottish, which is now a co-sanctioned event on both tours, so we'll see.
I thought I saw something in the coverage over the course of this week where they said that the Scottish would be on TV. Like, so that's interesting that it's now a co-sponsored event. Because I guess that would make sense as to why there's going to be United States coverage on that. Because obviously we know a lot of guys like to go over there and get themselves ready for the Open the week before.
Well, NBC's always covered the Scottish.
Oh, they have? I
or at, didn't le- know at least that. At least the past few years they have.
Okay. Well, they're covering it this year, or somebody is. I can't. I don't know who said it, but,
yeah, but I think I
literally watch golf on four different outlets this week between Golf Channel, ESPN Plus, CBS, and then maybe it was three. Maybe it was three outlets.
Yeah, we'll stick with three.
Skeeter, do we have anything more for this Pebble Beach Pro-Am?
I do not.
I do not either. So I will say I hope to have as much fun with a good sweat as I did this week, and hopefully I can cash one. But I don't mind. I never mind cashing an 18-1 top six, I'll tell you that.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Paid for last week's bets, paid for this week's bets. So,
you need to hit a big one so you can get that Super Bowl ticket paid for.
Well, you're right about that. I got to make a phone call when we get done with this podcast and try to wrap that ticket up. That might be as entertaining as the podcast, the conversation why I try to get Super Bowl tickets, because my friend's got them and he's not going. And we're going to find out how good of friends we are when I tell you how much I paid for him. I was in his wedding. I better not pay full aftermarket price. We'll find out.
Right. You know, give a little wedding discount.
I hope so. I hope so. I'm going to be cutting grass for free for a couple of years, maybe. We'll see.
Oh, I think that's a fair trade-off.
You know what? I'm not arguing with it if that's what it comes down to. I'll let you know how that goes.
Yes, please do.
All right, dog. Well, if you got nothing else, I got nothing else. Good luck to you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It'll be a week without football, so it should be a great week. Chill out and watch golf.
Absolutely. Very few places in the world do you want to see better visuals than Pebble Beach.
Well, Skeeter, thank you, my man. Thank you, everybody, for listening. For Skeeter Robinson, I'm James Adams. This has been the Fantistics My Fantasy Fix DFS Golf Podcast.